Welcome to Digital Oil and Gas with Jeffrey Kahn. I'm Jeffrey. Digital Oil and Gas looks at the impact of digital technology on the global oil and gas industry. If you want to discuss this week's topic further or just stay in touch, you can always reach me at Jeffrey Kahn on Twitter or at jeffreykahn.com. Welcome back to another episode of Digital Oil and Gas. My name is Jeffrey, and today I'm very pleased to welcome Floyd Baker, who is the Vice President of Antea's North America business, to the podcast. Floyd, welcome to Digital Oil and Gas.
Well, Jeffrey, thank you for having me here. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun, actually. So today's conversation is going to be about platform structures and platform solutions for solving challenges related to infrastructure management. The challenge of organizations that own hard assets in oil and gas is they have to be maintained and they've got to be carefully operated, and you need to understand their current operating state and be able to set up the permits so that you can go and support them and maintain them. And frequently these are all trapped in various silos of information, and Antea identified that this was a problem worthy of solving. And so we're going to talk about that today. But let's begin though, Floyd, if you don't mind, share a little bit about where you've originated. For a Canadian, you don't have a Canadian accent, so I'm guessing you're from somewhere south of the border.
Right, yeah, not a Canadian. I'm from Texas, been here all my life, born and raised. In the asset integrity oil and gas industry for my entire career of about 39, almost 40 years.
Whoa.
Yeah, specifically in asset integrity management. So always involved in some way, shape, or form with managing asset-intense environments like petrochemical plants, refineries, power generation plants, you name it. Everywhere they have pressure vessels, pipes, tanks, reactors, things that may go boom in the night if you don't take care of them.
Yeah, and there'll be a few of those in Texas, I'm guessing.
Yeah, there's quite a few here. I think they consider this area where we're at here in just north of Houston, Texas, as kind of like the oil and gas capital of this nation. But it's pretty busy when it comes to those kind of plants around here.
Yeah, there's a lot along the Gulf Coast, but I know as you go inland, there's facilities too. So so just north of Houston, what part?
So we're north of Houston, just on the north side of the Woodlands on Lake Conroe.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I love the Woodlands area. I get down there all the time. It's a major conference meeting space, and oil and gas industry has quite a few offices down there, service companies too. So
a lot of those headquarters there have moved over there over the past few years.
Yeah.
That and now big tech is moving in. So it's getting busy around here.
No, nothing wrong with that. So asset integrity. So you started your career. You spent 40 years at this. Well, tell me more about that. Like what kind of jobs have you held that are of curious and interest?
Sure. I started in the business at the bottom, just as a non-destructive testing technician. So we would actually go out and perform the tests on these equipments, like using ultrasonic tools to test for metal thickness.
Oh, sure.
Using radiography to test like weld quality to make sure the welds are mechanically sound.
Right.
So I was all in the testing business back then, and always kind of drawn toward the higher tech methods for testing. So technology in the sense of, the tools we use. And, that later kind of evolved into more of the inspection role where I could oversee those testing folks and kind of compile that data and figure out what it all means in order to, kind of create actionable decisions.
Yep.
We didn't have the tools back then to do what we do today. I mean, back then it was all, a big cheap tablet and a number two pencil. let's see how many people know what that means.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're a certain millennial, you're probably a number two pencil.
What is that? Cheap tablet.
Exactly. I have big pencils in my desk here, which I use. Pull one out here. I'll show it to you on the camera. If you're listening, you'll be able to see it. Check the size of that baby out. That
wow.
is a serious. It says made in Germany. 2B pencil, but it's super
that's
thick.
Too big. That stands for too big.
It won't fit. One thing I do know, it won't fit behind my ear.
No, of course not.
Right on. Yeah. So big sheets of paper and pencil. Yeah. So yeah, the technology of the Egyptians. So from there, where did you end up?
Yeah. So I went from the testing and inspection industry and world ended up recruited by one of the larger companies in the petrochemical industry, and hired on as a department manager for those kinds of things, inspection and engineering.
Sure. Right your way up. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And spent about half my career doing that. So half my career has been as a service company providing those technology type services. And the other half, or another part of the half, was more around the end user, the people who were in the plants and requiring those kinds of things for different reasons. A lot of it had to do initially from regulation,
you know,
the OSHA and DOT and different people get involved. So we had to do it for those reasons. But overall, the reason was because we just didn't want things to come apart, you know, for a lot of reasons. One, safety, the other, environmental, and then, of course, the financial risk associated to all that. So a lot of good reasons why people, why companies and organizations require these kinds of tools.
Yeah.
And recently, here the past year and a half, I've joined Antea, interestingly enough, as I was always kind of one who would hover toward technology and the future, what the future might look like. And with Antea, I just had the great opportunity to join on, and it is what the future looks like. It's taking all that information and placing it in one space and making it just a click away from access. And creating a tool that you can actually generate reports and visualize millions of data points through just one visualization, or, you know, bidirectionally link this information through all kinds of visualizations. Anything from 2D PNIDs, PFDs, plot plans, to 3D models, even point cloud digital twins.
So what's the day in the life like for someone who's, a struggling in this world to try and make sense of their environment, right? So imagining a facilities engineer responsible for some asset, and usually an example, the Colonial Pipeline, which is a recent illustration, hits the news, and suddenly people are asking you questions like, so what's our exposure here? What's a day in the life like of somebody who's not very well equipped to be able to answer those questions? What's it like?
Yeah. So, well, the alternative is most people have gone through some form of digital transformation, right? They have. Most people are at least digitalized, which is really just the first step in digital transformation. They've taken all their old paper documents that you might find, some of it over in the maintenance department over here, some of it over here in the operations, some of it over here in engineering, and they've taken all that information, they've digitized it, but it still lays in those data silos, right? If you're somebody out there and if you're an engineer and you're, let's say you're replacing a nozzle on a pressure vessel, for example, where corrosion maybe requires it to be replaced, and you're still trying to figure out, well, where do I find what kind of a flange, what kind of flanges, what kind of a nozzle, what's the metallurgy made of, what thickness is it? All this information can be scattered all over that plant, really, if you think about it. Whereas when you have these kinds of solutions in place, those all this kind of information is readily available. Data silos are torn down so that you can actually access that information in only seconds. Whereas, as opposed to the guy years ago would have to literally walk over to the maintenance department. He'd have to actually go over to stores to order materials. First, he'd have to go to engineering and make sure of the right metal thicknesses, metallurgy, and that sort of thing. So you might spend a day or two, just trying to gather the information before you could even order materials and execute the job.
Yeah, and I'm trying to imagine now if my physical infrastructure is actually spread out, and now I've got to drive to that asset. And, so now it's 400 kilometers away. I got to drive out there. I'd probably have to send someone with some experience. You can't always send a junior guy out there, a low-cost guy. You might have to send a pretty expensive guy out there because – you don't know what you're going to find, especially if you don't trust the data that you've got. And you're going to need that smart set of eyes and to stare at it and go, okay, I know what I'm looking at here.
Yeah, that's a really good point. When you consider some of, let's just talk midstream industry, whereas there are a lot of smaller sites, but they're scattered out everywhere. They're
everywhere, yeah.
And they're typically in remote areas, and some of them are manned, some of them aren't manned. So, you know, one way to look at this, and I remember during COVID, talking to some of our customers and being able to plan work activities from their couch at home, because they could visualize through a digital twin things like they could take measurements, you know, for scaffolding height. They could actually mark out areas for a heavy lift where you would be able to physically park a crane.
Yeah.
And they'd also be able to send out essential workers to actually execute the work, and yet from home remotely be able to monitor progress and that sort of thing. So
to imagine if you didn't have that data at your fingertips, how on earth would you even do that?
Well, you'd actually have to go to the site.
And go to the site.
That might be 7 hours away somewhere out in West Texas. You know, you just never know. So.
And what are the rules in the U.S.? Are you allowed to actually send two people or one person out by themselves? I know in Canada there are rules that depending on what you're up to, you cannot just go one person. You got to send two for safety.
So I haven't dealt with the service side in a little while now, a few years. But I will say that I know that some companies have that same requirement, where it's has to be at least two people, but not all.
Yeah, but even so, some employees will certainly want to they'll feel safer if they're not driving 7.5-8 hours by themselves, way out into the middle of nowhere, and they haven't got a wing buddy. You definitely want somebody with you, and yet here we are in a world of COVID where that's a recipe to get sick. So
And the most important part here is that you can actually plan all those activities without having to go on site. So you've just reduced your risk and improved your efficiency, you know, phenomenally just by being able to plan this from your couch.
From your couch, yeah. Yeah, your point about scaffolding height is really fascinating. I never even thought about that. But you know, if you could, you know, without that data and knowing that, you could do something like mobilize a crew to do some work and then get to the site and it's at height. Yeah. They don't have scaffolding, they don't crane.
And logistics, you know, also, you know, having access to, you know, something as useful as Google Maps and being able to bidirectionally link these geo references in that map. So now you're actually able to, even if you're, you know, mobilizing materials from a vendor and send them exact locations, you know, geospatial locations that they can drive to. Mm-hmm. Being able to plan all that work in advance, though, that's the biggest.
It's a big time series, yeah.
Right there, and efficiency. And then when you execute, you minimize your risk because you're only going to send the essential folks to perform the work. They're going to do the work, and everything is already staged and ready for them. And then they get to leave and you know, part ways from that hazardous environment. So
yeah.
To me, it's a game changer for the maintenance world.
Yeah, if they have the technology. Let's just go to wind back a little bit though, because you said you know it's the data in my sort of pre-structured world is all spread out. Why does it end up all spread out like that? Like it seems pretty obvious to me that you know, if you were designing the business, you would by nature you'd want to put all of this information about the assets into one spot. Why does it end up all spread out like this?
So, speaking from my side of the experience in terms of different tasks that people do within a plant and different disciplines, you know, mine was, well, we perform inspections. You know, my group would perform inspections. We would, you know, our engineers would design repairs and that sort of thing. And all that ended up in a file somewhere in a cabinet right there in our group. We own that information, right?
Right.
Well, the same is to be said for the maintenance guys. Well, here's what we were told to do. Here's what we actually did. And here's what's going to be in our file just for future reference. So same happens from operations and everywhere else. So that's just, I think it's by nature, it happens that way.
It's just a natural way of doing business when you think about it. Yeah.
Sure. And the worst part is when you make changes and, you know, one discipline doesn't know. And then you get into a project and realize, oh, there's been some changes that I was unaware of. And now everything changes. Maybe it's the materials, you know, metallurgy or something. Yeah. And now you've got a long lead, pipe spec or something that you have to order. You've just shut your job down and extended it for a longer period of time. Yeah. And who knows? What if the plant's down too? Now you got to think about lost opportunity. You know, my customers are going to be screaming at me to provide my products, and I can't because my plant is down because somebody made a mistake.
Yeah, something was supposed to be documented and it wasn't. I actually was just working on a case example this morning for a fabricator who was commissioned to replace a steel tank. And this tank was on the exterior of a facility, and the piping from the tank went through the exterior wall into the factory to supply the raw material from the tank into the process. And the tank had developed a leak, and they repaired it, but they figured it's time to get a replacement made. So they had the fabricator come out to do a replica of it. And they said, here's the documentation. And it was the original as-built, you know, from way back when. And someone had modified the tank over time to add a nozzle at the top to, for some purpose, venting perhaps, and it was not in the documentation. And so the fabricator's trying to make the thing so that he can replace the tank perfectly for the facility, and it's missing this critical piece of infrastructure. And if they hadn't discovered it, the crew shows up to do the tank replacement, and it's the wrong tank. And now the factory's down for however long it's going to take for them to mobilize welding crews, get the steel parts that they need at the right grade, assuming they could get the parts, welder with the right ticket. Like, you add it all up, and you know the chaos and cost associated with that one little thing is just it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, the ability for all these different disciplines to work in the same environment and everyone see.
She's the same
thing.
Everything
that happens, you know, it just creates so much transparency, and an opportunity to operate so much more efficiently. Those kinds of things are much less likely to ever take place again.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge advantage if you can actually figure out how to do this. And so, when you go and you meet with organizations that don't have this kind of mindset to take the asset information and aggregate it into one platform or one spot, and when you walk them through, you know, here's what you could do, well, what is the reaction? Like, I mean, are companies open to this, or do they go, we're pretty okay with our filing cabinets? Like, how do they see it?
So most people have evolved. Most organizations have evolved to at least some level of digitization.
So they got Maximo or something like that, you mean?
Yeah, most have some sort of an ERP or EAM, Enterprise Resource Planning, or
Enterprise Asset Management System.
Enterprise Asset Management Tool. So they already have that, and which is another key point there, is being able to interface that with the asset integrity management aspect so that they both stay evergreen at the same time. The last thing you want is to create two separate data silos again and have inconsistent data. So for the folks that we talk to, most have something there now they're using. But again, there's still a lot of data silos. When they start to see one, the visualizations, you know, sometimes it's hard to look at all these different spreadsheets and
make sense of
graphs
all,
and make sense of it all. And when you can actually portray that in some visualization, some form of a graphic, whether it's like a dashboard with pie charts and bar charts and all that cool stuff, or it's through a 3D model and using color coding to show where your risk is in your plant, things like that, that they see that as valuable. And so do I. You know, part of my reason coming here is that I've been involved with this for, again, almost 40 years, and I've never seen a tool like this. And I've seen them all. You know, in my time,
capacity, yeah, you would have seen them all, from everything from, as you mentioned, right, 2B pencils and paper, the way up to augmented reality goggles and visualizations that way. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Seen them all.
So it's very well received. It is very well received. And people have started to get to a point in terms of, we know what the future looks like. We all do. We can see, you know, we all are somewhat of a visionary to some degree. So I guess one of the points we drive home is the future is now, you know, it is now. And yes, there are still things to come, But now you can eliminate all of these inefficiencies, all of these, let's say, breaks in the circuit, and create a smooth, efficient, completely transparent solution to all of those kinds of pain points.
Pain points, yeah, right there, yeah. Now, what about the mobile worker, you know, let's go back to that guy in the truck or the gal in the truck that's been dispatched to a facility to carry out some repair, which the system has said, hey, this is now urgently needed. They're carrying a smartphone in their pocket now, most part. That's a supercomputer of some capability out there.
Yeah.
How are you supporting the this kind of remote worker, mobile worker? Are they able to sort of plug into the same infrastructure as if they were sitting in the office, or are they still constrained because you haven't got telecommunications access or you haven't got data out there?
So a couple of things. One is yes to the first question. They do have that same access. We can actually access a platform through your smartphone or your tablet, and visualize, search, filter, find, look at the 3D drawings or look at the digital twin. You can do all of these things from your tablet or your smartphone. You can actually also generate reports from there. You can actually make annotations, take pictures, video, and document any information associated to any given asset that's in there. You can actually, we have a QR tracker now. It's called an asset tracker that we can actually, if you have these QR codes installed on these assets, you just scan the QR code and shazam, you're looking at every bit of information associated to that asset throughout its life cycle.
So all I have to do is just an adhesive to stick it to the outside and off you go. All right.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Why not?
And then the cool part is, when you have these maintenance tasks or inspections or testing tasks to do out there in those facilities, even if you don't have pervasive Wi-Fi, 5G, or maybe you're in West Texas and have no signal, you at least can still access the information because this information gets pushed to that device while you have Wi-Fi, so it's still available online.
Mm.
And then when you actually go back and connect to Wi-Fi, well, it automatically uploads to the platform.
Ah,
so
right. Yeah,
now
you're synchronized up. Yeah.
Party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've eliminated a whole lot of paper documentation that normally takes place or data entry. So now you've just taken if a guy went out and performed an inspection, we calculate that it takes about 40% of his time of performing that inspection. 40% of that time is actually report time.
40% of 40%.
40% of its whole time it takes to inspect an asset, 40% of that time is used in reporting, right?
In reporting, not capturing the data about the inspection you're doing, the actual reporting on the data that you've captured about the inspection.
Exactly. Going back to
Holy
your desk,
mackerel.
Sitting down at your desk and typing in all this information into the platform. So we've eliminated that part, right? So we just put 40% of the time it costed to do that back in our end user's pocket.
So how do you do that? Like so you're collecting the data at the site. I'm trying to visualize. I'm standing in front of an unmanned facility, tank facility, for instance, battery. So there's a bunch of wells flowing into it. I'm now standing there. I'm carrying out my inspection. Is the data that I'm collecting as I'm doing the inspection automatically feeding the reporting so I don't actually have to do that step? Is that what's going on?
It is. You're actually using tick boxes or drop-down boxes, taking pictures, making comments, annotations of your findings, possibly even making recommendations or reporting anomalies. And all of this information is real-time going to the platform if you have Wi-Fi. If you don't, then when you get to Wi-Fi, it automatically
syncs up. So you're using your smartphone effectively or your tablet as a data collection / reporting platform. On whether you're on or off the grid doesn't matter. You're able to actually do it.
Excellent. That's exactly right. Yes, sir.
That is very, very cool. The huge time saver when you start to think about it. How do field people react to this? I mean, this looks like I got to tell you, if I said to you, I'm going to take 40% of your job away, people will go, well, if you did that for two people, you've eliminated one full-time job. So this looks like a recipe to take jobs away from people. How do field workers feel about this?
Well, the way I see it is not really changing what they do, it's how they do it. and making their job easier. And yes, it does require less resources. So that just means that, maybe they don't have 10 people. Maybe nowadays they only have five. But at the end of the day, it's the overall cost to the end user, which means that savings gets passed on to society or the consumer.
Through lower costs, And I'd also argue, whether I might be wrong or not, but the doing documentation and reporting, it's not particularly inspiring as work goes. If I were a field person, I would rather be in the field, frankly, than sitting at a desk. You know what I mean? Mucking around with spreadsheets and reports. Oh yeah, I would think so. Yeah, I think you know, if you're staring at this, you'd say, hey. With this tool, I can actually do more. I can do more production. Or I can do a more thorough job when I get to a facility, because I've freed up a chunk of my time to be able to do this well. So I suppose if you're thinking about it through that lens, you'd have to feel inspired by this, not let down.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And what about the senior managers and folks further up, higher up on the food chain? What is their sense when they see the possibilities provided by these platforms? What's their reaction?
Well, one is of course the cost savings, the cost reduction.
Yeah, they can see that, Joe. Yeah.
Two is how quickly they see a return on that investment. Mm. And three is the transparency. You know, now one can sit in, say, in a high rise in downtown Houston or downtown or in Woodlands,
of course,
and actually see the status of their facilities, no matter where they are in the U.S. or in the world, for that matter, and know firsthand. So it's peace of mind.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There's no, when you think about it, there's no hands touching the data between the frontline collecting it and the home office who's trying to understand their risk and vulnerability. There's no, you know what I mean? There's no,
sure.
There's no opportunity really for the data to be manipulated in some fashion that paints a more positive picture than there might otherwise be.
Right.
So there'll be some value there. Is there an environmental angle here that's worthy of exposing? I mean, because if you think to talk to the oil and gas companies today, or anyone who owns significant infrastructure, the pressures from environment, social, and governance are now very high, and so there must be a dimension to this which relates to the environment, I think.
So there's a direct implication to the environment. I mean, if you look at the requirements of OSHA's PSM rule, this was the initial purpose for companies looking for this kind of a solution. Since then, in I want to say mid-90s to maybe it was early 2000s, EPA got involved and they created their R&P. It meets those same requirements. So at the same time, we're looking at the safety side of the business. We're also looking at the environmental side of the business with just as much requirement.
Yeah, attention. Yeah. Yeah. And I suspect, too, you know, if you can raise your game on asset integrity, you're going to do a better job at leak detection, leak mitigation, emissions reporting and emissions data capture. And as you think about it, you know, down the road, we're going to add more and more sophisticated technologies and sensors to this plant and infrastructure. And so the task of integrity actually is going to get harder and harder. It's not going to get easier. It's going in the other direction. And so if you don't have these platforms, it beggars the mind. How on earth are you doing this?
Yeah, well, I mean, think about it. How do you manage all that data? If you've got sensors all over the plants, and IoT, Industrial Internet of Things, is really taking off.
Yeah.
And we've recognized that early along. Mm. So we actually have means to communicate with remote sensing devices.
Yep.
So we can collect those millions and millions of data points that one might let fall through the cracks and manage them right there within the platform and get to look at that real-time data right through a digital twin.
Yeah, that would be immensely valuable. And then when you think about, you know, adding the sensors onto existing kit, if you don't actually have a digital version of your existing plant, you're going to lose track of where these new sensors and devices are even located. Like, how would you know? And we don't really have the luxury of, you know, retaining a lot of employees with a lot of history and trapped in their between their ears, right? We have to get that out onto paper so that we can let younger folks carry out the same kind of work with confidence. That's one of the other dimensions of these technologies is they unlock a talent strategy, a talent game plan to attract younger people to the industry.
We are in the great crew chains, as they call it.
Yep.
And a lot of those brilliant minds that hold all that valuable information are retiring and going off to Florida or someplace. And we've got a whole new workforce coming in. So, yes, these are tools or solutions that that help smooth that process and at least provide that same knowledge for this new workforce coming on board.
Yeah, it's a great story, and long overdue, I would say, and immensely needed. Floyd, this has been really fascinating to learn more about this and the power of these this tool and these platforms. If people want to learn more about Anteo, where do they go? How do you spell the company's name?
Just go to antea.tech. It's antea.tech. That's our website.
And where did this come from? Originates American technology or is it international?
It originated from Italy in 1989, where a super major in the industry asked to create a software platform that could manage their asset information. So they wouldn't have to use spreadsheets. And so that's where it started.
It started
with asset integrity, and it's just bloomed into more of a reliability, risk mitigation type tool from then.
That was brilliant. Floyd, thank you so much for coming on Digital Oil and Gas today, sharing a little bit about this platform technology and its imperative in the industry.
Well, thank you, Jeffrey. It was truly my pleasure.
This has been another episode of Digital Oil and Gas. If you like what you've heard, please press the like button. Or if you want, you're curious to learn more, leave a comment for myself or for Floyd, and we'll get back to you. And better yet, share this with your colleagues who might be interested in understanding how these platform tools make a huge difference in asset integrity areas. Meanwhile, I will return shortly with another episode. Bye for now.